will be the last place you look. I never thought of that.
That's a very good point.
It's a good one, isn't it?
Gonna keep looking for it, even though I've found it.
Yeah.
Sally and Wem. Good morning. Worst expression is surely speaking personally for myself. Just idiotic. She says.
Yeah. And one of the worst phrases that you start to use yourself, especially at work, things like reaching out, says Brian in Essex. Mm-hmm. Noted, Brian. The Voice
of the UK. This is Five Live Breakfast.
Keep those coming in, 850-58. You're listening to Five Live Breakfast. Chris Warburton and Claire McDonnell with you. Here are the news headlines at 8 o'clock. Pressure is growing on the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to agree to a ceasefire deal with the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. Sir Keir Starmer has used his first speech to the UN General Assembly as Prime Minister to call for an immediate pause in the fighting. The Prime Minister warned of a wider war if hostilities were allowed to continue. Our Middle East correspondent Hugo Bacega is in Beirut.
Yesterday there was some hope that those diplomatic efforts could result in a ceasefire. I think this morning there's much more pessimism. I think it's very difficult to see how a ceasefire can be achieved at the moment. The Israelis are saying that this offensive against Hezbollah is going to continue with these intense and widespread airstrikes. From Hezbollah, there haven't been signs that they are willing to back down. They have continued to fire rockets at Israel, including this morning. No reports of casualties. Many of the rockets were intercepted.
The Prime Minister has had a two-hour dinner with Donald Trump in New York. The pair were joined at the meeting by the Foreign Secretary, David Lammy. A UK government source said they discussed the long-standing friendship between the United Kingdom and the United States. Sir Keir said he had hoped to meet Kamala Harris, but couldn't due to diary challenges.
The Treasury is reconsidering the government's manifesto promise to crack down on non-DOMs, people who are registered overseas for tax purposes. Labour had earmarked £1 billion for extra NHS appointments and school breakfast clubs, which it aimed to raise by toughening up those rules. BBC News understands that there are concerns the policy might not raise any money at all.
The partner of Nicola Bulley, Paul Ansell, has told the BBC that the social media coverage surrounding her disappearance was like a monster. Her body was found in a river in Lancashire in February last year, not far from where she vanished. An inquest found she had died due to accidental drowning. Despite police saying Mr. Ansell was never a suspect, he says he was inundated with abusive messages and the whole family was targeted.
I was getting direct messages from people that I've never met. And you can't do anything about it. When you experience something like this, you realise what a huge monster it can be, I guess.
The documentary The Search for Nicola Bulley will be broadcast next Thursday at 9 p.m. on BBC One and will be available on the BBC iPlayer.
And a year to the day since the sycamore gap tree in Northumberland was felled, the National Trust is offering communities across the UK a chance to request 49 of its saplings. Some have already been promised to sites. One will go to Backwell in Bristol in memory of a 12-year-old boy who died of cancer and for all children facing the disease.
Let's get you sports news this morning. Here's Nick.
Thank you. Tottenham overcame the early dismissal of Radu Dragosin as they beat the Azerbaijan side Karabag 3-0 in their opening game of this season's Europa League. Rangers were 2-0 winners at Malmo. Celtic are the first Scottish side to qualify for the Women's Champions League group stage since it was introduced 4 years ago. It's thanks to their 3-0 aggregate win over the Ukrainian side Vorskla Poltava. Arsenal overturned their 1-0 first leg deficit against Hecken to go through 4-1. Whilst Manchester City were 8-0 aggregate winners over Paris FC. Pace bowler Josh Hull has been ruled out of England's tour of Pakistan with a quad injury. The RB Formula One team has confirmed they're dropping Australian driver Daniel Ricciardo for the final six races of the season. And Jack Draper's through to the third round of the Japan Open. It's after beating the second seed Hubert Hurkacz in straight sets.
I just want to drop this in, Chris. Pointless phrases.
Yeah,
no name on this. Right. I can't stand it when people use corporate speak in everyday conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Is it to make themselves sound important? I once asked my daughter-in-law if she'd seen her dad lately and was informed that she simply didn't have the bandwidth to visit him. Imagine how lucky we felt being scheduled into the calendar.
I like that because it might sound a bit more brutal otherwise. I just, you know, been too busy to see them.
Big corporate.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Simon's here with the weather. Hi, Simon.
Hello, morning. It's been a very wet night across some central and southern areas of England. Just to give you an idea of how wet it's been, actually not over the last few days, but over the last month, in Woburn in Bedfordshire, we've had four times the average September rainfall. And now, in fact, it is the wettest, or it has been the wettest month on record across all months. So yeah, very, very wet conditions. The rain is gradually today going to clear to the south, but this morning you may have some problems. There could be some disruption because of a lot of water on the roads and some localised flooding in places as well. The rain will eventually clear from most areas, as I said. It'll take it a bit longer for it to clear from the southeast of England, but sunny spells developing across England and Wales. One or two showers, though, likely for northern parts of England. A brisk northerly wind. It's going to feel pretty chilly today. Maximum temperatures only getting to about 11 to 14 degrees. Scotland and Northern Ireland, again, largely dry. There'll be some sunny spells, a few showers perhaps, but again, a brisk northerly wind. Temperatures of 7 to 12 degrees. How about the weekend? Saturday looking dry and brighter for England and Wales, cloudier for Scotland, but then more rain and strong winds moving for Sunday across England and Wales.
Oof. Okay, thank you, Simon. Barbara in West Yorkshire, not being nasty, but, you know, not being horrible, but it's like a get out clause, isn't it? That's what you think it is.
I'm not being
horrible, but I'm going to be horrible. Yeah. Yes, okay, I kind of understand that as well. Anyway, Ellie, we'd never be horrible about you.
Oh, thank you so much. Unfortunately, the roads are looking a bit horrible this morning. Weather not helping, as Simon was saying. The M5, probably the most major route's been affected at the moment. Northbound, it's closed between junction 16 Aztec West to 14. Southbound, it's closed from 14 at Thornbury to 15 at the Armourers Bridge. Change. This is flooding. So northbound, you've got congestion to the A38 between Woodford and Almondsbury. Southbound, it's looking busy back to the Michael Wood services, the A38 as well, queuing because of that. Some local routes also being affected this morning. So if you're in that area, just allow yourself plenty of extra time. Causing some problems on the trains as well. I would say the advice is just double check before you set off this morning. There will be some disruption across the network, but particularly on Transport for Wales. Also around Shrewsbury and Wolverhampton, there's quite a lot of flooding going on there. So do double check. Aside from the weather, back to the roads. The M1 southbound, one lane is closed between Junction 9 at Redbourne and Junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead. You've got congestion to Junction 11 there because of an accident. And the M25 anti-clockwise, there was an accident before Junction 28 at Brentwood earlier. Congestion there is a mile from Junction 30 currently. Ellie Brennan, 5 Live Travel.
The voice of the UK. This is 5 Live Breakfast.
And good morning, it's Claire McDonald and Chris Warburton with you. 5 Live Breakfast on Friday morning. Thank you for being with us. Now, we've been bringing you the latest from New York, where Sir Keir Starmer used his first speech to the UN as Prime Minister to call for a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. He told the General Assembly that it was vital that both sides step back from the brink.
The Prime Minister told British people to leave Lebanon immediately. We've been hearing from Libby, who is trying. She had one flight cancelled and can't get another until next week.
I feel like the government, that Keir is sort of telling us off. Like, leave immediately. And we're all like, we're trying. I know that I'm safe where I am and that the likelihood of anything happening to me here is incredibly slim. But of course, it's really hard to explain that to your friends and family who are anxiously watching the news.
We'll have more on that story before 8:30.
Also, stormy weather on both sides of the Atlantic today. We've got more on flood warnings in parts of England and Wales. We'll get an update from our reporter in Bedfordshire. Meanwhile, Storm Helena made landfall in Florida's Big Bend region overnight, the strongest hurricane ever to do so.
And do keep sending us your nominations for the phrase bag. It's Claire's In My Opinion today, and it's been excellent. Those words and phrases that we can't help using, though, even if they're completely pointless.
Yeah, for real.
For 100% for real.
110%, Chris.
At the end of the day, you're absolutely right. Manchester City fan Rachel Hurdson, she joined us earlier to look ahead to the weekend's Premier League action, talking Manchester City against Newcastle, but she simply couldn't help but get involved.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, all
because,
right.
Because if you stay in, to be honest with you, that's saying, well, the rest of the time I'm lying.
It's true. She's right.
Doug from Donny agrees with her as well. Keep those coming in. 850-58. We'll read out as many as we can, but there's so many it may not be possible.
No, it might not be. But for now, though, at 8:09, we're starting with the latest on the allegations into former Harrods owner Mohammed Al-Fayed. Police have said they will explore if anyone else should be pursued for criminal offences linked to him.
Yes, the Met urged anyone who has not previously come forward with allegations to do so and said it would also review historic complaints. The force said that it has identified 19 allegations which resulted in crimes being recorded involving Al Fayed. The offences were alleged to have taken place between 1979 and 2013.
Earlier I spoke to Maria Muller, a barrister from Justice for Harrod Survivors. They now have 60 women who are formally retained and are going through around 200 inquiries, some relating to Fulham Football Club. And Maria began by sharing some of the feelings felt by the women she represents since that BBC documentary on the issue came out.
They're all still very afraid and wary and worried about talking about what happened to them because they've been afraid for so long. And a lot of the women feel that they've been overlooked and that their voices haven't been heard. And so it's about providing them with a safe space to enable their voices to be heard.
Absolutely.
And to enable them to have the strength to feel that they can report things that happen to them. And, you know, that when I'm dealing with these women, that's what I try to do, to give them a safe space to feel held in that moment.
Meanwhile, a doctor who worked for former Harrods boss, Mohammed Al Fayed, has denied carrying out sexual health checks on staff members. Multiple women have told the BBC Dr. Anne Coxon carried out the medical checks whilst working for Fayed when he owned Harrods. Dr. Coxon was asked by the BBC on a street in London yesterday whether she carried out those tests, and she replied no.
Do you regret working for Mr. Al Fayed?
No.
You don't? Do you believe that he carried out these crimes?
I have no... Of course not.
Did you carry out STD tests on Harrod staff members?
No, I did not.
No, I did not. You'd have heard there. Well, Harrods have said that following a review over the past year, it had introduced 50 sexual harassment officers who received special training to, in their words, provide safe, empathetic assistance and support to workers with complaints of sexual harassment.
Well, let's talk now to Shabnam Chowdhury, a former detective superintendent for the Met Police. She's had experience of investigating historical domestic abuse claims. And also Claire Glasgow, director in the personal injury team at Field Fisher Solicitors, the firm who represented some of the victims of Harvey Weinstein. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Shabnam Chowdhury, let's talk to you first of all. I mean, how hard is it to investigate historical crimes, especially when the alleged perpetrator is dead?
Well, it's very, very difficult because obviously you will have the victim's allegation and the offences that she's reported to police. But you can never, ever speak to the perpetrator. And when you're talking about historic offences, particularly in these cases, which stem back from 1979 to 2013, then what there will be is a lack of forensic evidence, potentially lack of witness evidence, a lack of any other evidence that could corroborate the victim's allegation. But what I would also say is when you are dealing with sexual offences, you are always going to have those barriers because generally, they are one person's word against another's. So that makes it really, really difficult and far more traumatic for those victims to have the courage to come forward because they always feel that they're never going to be believed. This is going to be a mountain to climb for the Metropolitan Police and probably other forces because there will be other allegations that are going to come to light. When already 19 of those allegations were put before the Crown Prosecution Service between 2005 and 2013 and no further action was taken, that gives you an indication of how much of a challenge this is going to be to even try and pursue other potential offenders.
Yes, because the numbers are creeping up every single day. We just heard there from Maria Miller from the Justice for Harrod Survivors campaign, representing 60 women and already and 200 further cases that they're looking into as well. Will there, I mean, we've already, as you just said yourself, we know that the Met say that there are a number of cases that they have on their books. Will they be pulled out then? Will they be thrown into the mix of all of this?
Oh, yeah. Well, what they will do is they will review every single one of those allegations again. They'll have specialist trained detectives They'll have specially trained safeguarding officers that will link in with each of those victims, and they will go through each of those investigations with a fine-tuned comb. Because what they will look at is, has anything been missed? Were there witnesses that they that may have come to light that were never spoken to, that didn't want to be spoken to, that may have wanted to remain anonymous? Were there people within Harrods at that particular time that were spoken to, that had been complained to by those victims, but had never really had given a detailed explanation? So they'll go through each of those investigations with a fine tooth comb. See if there's anything new that can come from those.
Okay, let's bring in Claire Glasgow here, who represented some of the victims of Harvey Weinstein. Claire, welcome.
Good morning.
In those cases, and in many kind of sexual abuse cases involving one perpetrator, very often the prosecutors get testimony from women who tell a similar story and prove that these women never met before, can't have known, can't have got together and shared a story. Will that technique be used here? Because especially when you're talking about somebody who's no longer with us.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm looking at this from a slightly different perspective from Shabnam, who's looking at criminal prosecutions. And we represent women in civil claims for personal injury where, you know, the procedure is slightly different and the standard of proof is lower. So we're looking to show on the balance of probabilities that it's more likely than not that the assault took place and caused the psychiatric trauma that so many of these women experience. And we have found, I mean, we've represented women in various cases, including at trial, where we've been able to produce similar fact evidence. So that is women who don't know each other, who are telling very similar stories. You know, there's similar methods, similar words used, and it's really compelling when that's put before a court.
Mm. And of course, Al-Fayed is no longer with us, but there are other people who shall remain nameless who clearly may have known, may have enabled. What happens there? What happens in the case of those people who may not have been perpetrators, but may have been enablers?
Yeah, I mean, That's difficult, and it's obviously going to depend on the circumstances around each of those people as to what responsibilities they may have had towards the women affected. I think, you know, the issue in these cases is that you do have somebody who is incredibly powerful, on whom lots of people rely for their jobs, for their salary, and, you know, it creates a culture of silence. Where people are afraid to speak out, and the victims are often right at the bottom of that. They tend to be perhaps more junior, have far less influence. And I think the circumstances in which some of these assaults take place, it is quite unbelievable, even to the victims themselves, that this is happening to them. And the fear of speaking to other people and simply not being believed is enormous, on top of the psychological trauma that they've experienced.
And Claire, we were hearing just a little bit earlier in the programme there from Maria Miller from Justice for Harrods Survivors, and she's not the first person to raise a question over Harrods' advice. Obviously new owners, but they're saying come to us and we will compensate, and we're appalled by this, saying, well, actually, that maybe that is the wrong advice. It's not that you reaching out isn't a good idea, but we're talking about potential criminal investigations here. What do you think to what Harrods have been advising potential victims to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely positive that Harrods being open about this, that they're prepared to listen and to speak to victims and accept, you know, their stories. Clearly, there are various different options for women to consider. You know, they have the right to go and report an assault to the police if they've been sexually assaulted. Equally, if they're considering compensation, it's usually a good idea to get legal advice about what their rights are and what they may be entitled to. But certainly, you know, a big change for them from, you know, previous stance taken when Al-Fayed was in charge of Harrods.
Shabnam, I just heard you kind of, you know, making a sound of agreement when Claire was talking about women find themselves in this situation, and if it's the boss carrying it out, they they can't believe that it's actually happening to them. And then who do you go to? Who do you report it to? I mean, clearly you've been involved in a lot of these situations. And if there are still women listening to this, and it may not be in this case, but it may be in other cases where the corruption goes right to the top and they feel mute, what would you say to them?
I think you'll get this in many organisations, this hiding in plain sight. And when you've got someone that is a billionaire that holds a huge amount of power, I listened to some of the accounts of the victims over the last few days who felt totally and utterly helpless, who are still traumatised by what has happened to them because they never felt that they could go and speak to somebody else. And look, in my experience, one of the things that victims used to tell us, even in these type of situations, whether it's domestic or whether it's somebody that is known to them but doesn't necessarily work with them, they would say that when they did try and complain to other people, they would brush it under the carpet, they would laugh it off, and they'd say, look, it's just banter, just ignore it. You know, he can be a little bit flirty or a bit pervy, if you like, but just ignore him. And that's one of the real challenges that many of these victims most likely had. We're not talking about in recent years where for policing a lot has changed in terms of the care that is given to victims. I've worked with police officers in the past where the victims are not believed, where their accounts are discounted, where the Crown Prosecution Service won't prosecute because they didn't have stone bonker evidence, because they work on the basis of a strong likelihood of a conviction. So these are all the challenges that all of those women would have faced within those last few decades. And I think, as Claire was saying, the options now, no, he can't be prosecuted, but there has to be other options to give some form of closure. It's not going to change how they felt over these decades, but there will be other options to consider for them to be able to get some form of justice where they felt that their voices have finally been heard.
Shabnam, thank you for joining us. Shabnam Chowdhury, former Detective Superintendent for the Met, and Claire Glasgow, Director in the Personal Injury Team at Field Fisher Solicitors. They did represent some of Harvey Weinstein's victims. This is a statement from Harrods. Managing Director Michael Ward said yesterday that Al-Fayed presided over a toxic culture of secrecy, intimidation, fear of repercussion and sexual misconduct. He released a statement saying Harrods failed our colleagues and for that we're deeply sorry. We have all seen the survivors bravely speak out about the terrible abuse they suffered at the hands of Mohammed Al-Fayed. Whilst it is true that rumours of his behaviour circulated in the public domain, no charges or allegations were ever put to me by the police, the CPS, internal channels or others. Had they been, I would of course have acted immediately. 21 past 8.
Let's catch up with what's happening with flooding in the country. More than 60 flood warnings in place across England. Another night of heavy rain. Travel being disrupted. Homes and businesses have been damaged. Our reporter Simon Jones is in Shefford in Bedfordshire. Simon, morning. It keeps on coming.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's an official Met Office term, but I can tell you the weather this morning is grim. It has been raining all morning and it's been really heavy. I'm currently standing by the river. Normally you could walk along the path along the edge of the river. You can't do that today. Swans are gliding past. There's really a huge amount of water in the river and it is flowing very quickly. I can tell you here that people are anxiously popping their head out of their homes just to see how high this river is getting, because some houses did actually flood here on Monday when locals tell me the river reached the highest level they have ever seen. And with more rain coming down now, feeding into the river, well, people here are just wondering what the few hours to come are going to bring.
How widespread is it?
Well, at the moment, we have got a weather warning in place. Overnight, there was an amber warning. That expired at 6 a.m. But now we've got a yellow weather warning for heavy rain in force for the next hour or so. And that covers this area, the Midlands, the whole of southern England and also Wales. And we're hearing about problems in many areas. For example, on the M5 near Bristol this morning, there's so much water on the road that part of the motorway has had to be shut in both directions. We're hearing about schools being forced to close. And this weather warning means potentially we're going to see more homes flooded today. There's going to be difficulty for people getting about, particularly on the roads, driving around here today. Lots of really huge puddles on the road, so cars being urged to drive really slowly and carefully. And we could also see power cuts. And I think when this water feeds into the rivers, that's when we're going to get real concern about whether there could be more flooding of homes. Here the local flood warden has been out really checking on elderly neighbours. He's actually opened up the community centre in case anyone wants to go in for a warming cup of tea. So it's a pretty grim situation. But one good news, bit of good news for me at least, is one of the local residents has taken pity on my bedraggled state and brought me a nice cup of tea.
Well, at least there's some positive. Okay, Simon, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Simon Jones is there in Shefford in Bedfordshire. Yeah, we'll catch up with Simon in due course, actually, and he can tell us exactly how the weather's going to be looking. I think from what he said earlier on, tomorrow's probably going to be okay-ish, but more wet and windy weather expected to arrive later on Sunday and into Monday. So we'll get the full picture from Simon in a few minutes' time, actually. But it's coming up to 25 minutes past eight now.
Matt Shawley,
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel. I was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
Lisa Nadi, Central State of Culture Media as well.
We're toughening up the system to make sure that people who are unfit owners can't become football club owners.
Matt Shawley,
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Let's bring you the latest on the situation with Lebanon. Pressure is growing on the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to agree to a ceasefire deal with the Lebanese group, the militant group Hezbollah. Sakir Starmer has used his first speech to the UN General Assembly as Prime Minister to call for an immediate pause in the fighting. He also warned of a wider war if his hostilities were allowed to continue.
I call on Israel and Hezbollah, stop the violence. Step back from the brink. We need to see an immediate ceasefire to provide space for a diplomatic settlement, because further escalation serves no one. It offers nothing but more suffering for innocent people on all sides.
Earlier in the programme, I spoke to Libby, who has been in Beirut for the past month whilst working for a charity.
Obviously, it's been stressful not being able to get out, especially with Keir Starmer telling us we need to leave immediately. And none of us can book any flights until next Wednesday, which is when I've booked a flight to Cairo. But the stress is whether or not there'll actually be an airport by then. Who knows?
Right. And tell us why you can't get out till next Wednesday.
There's no space on any commercial flights. We had a flight booked on Wednesday evening to Cairo, and that was cancelled. Basically, the only airline that's running is Middle Eastern Airlines, MEA, and all the flights are getting booked up like crazy.
Mm. So did you say you were on a flight and it was cancelled, so you've had to kind of rebook?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And how did you get that information?
What, that it was cancelled?
Yeah.
The airline let us know. It was a pretty normal sort of cancellation procedure.
How does that leave you feeling? As you say, on the one hand, you're getting messages from the British Prime Minister, you know, get out now, and you're trying your damnedest to get out. Do you think the British government could be doing more to help you get out?
Well, to be honest, up until, I can't remember if it was yesterday or the day before, we couldn't register our presence. So there was all this talk of an evacuation plan, etc. And we were all sort of sat there like, well, the registration to let them know our presence hasn't been open since we've been here. If they do an evacuation, which seemed through the language like it was going to be imminent, we were all like, okay, well, they're not going to know that we're here. There'll be an evacuation plan. So that was really, that caused quite a lot of anxiety. But then they opened that. So that's better. I feel like the government, that Keir is telling us off, like, leave immediately. And we're all like, we're trying.
Libby there, I spoke to her earlier. She's in northeast Beirut and she's trying to get out. She's got a flight booked for next Wednesday. She said she went to the British consul in Beirut, but there was nobody there. So it was kind of closed. It wasn't like they'd left, but it was shut. But obviously very worrying times. Not being able to get an answer from the people who represent you on the ground where you are is very worrying indeed. So we'll keep you updated on her journey out of the country. In my opinion today, it's my opinion, pointless phrases that really get my goat. I love this one, Chris, from Paul in Wolverhampton says, I got bored with the ridiculous corporate speak of blue sky thinking and running ideas up flagpoles. So I started creating and using my own phrases in meetings. People would just people would just nod along as if I said something meaningful. His favourite was this, a synergistic topspin.
Oh yeah,
give it a go, says Paul in Wolverhampton.
I like that.
Try it today for in a meeting.
That's a nice idea.
Brilliant.
Synergistic topspin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I absolutely hate the phrase "living the dream," says Ian. If I hear that, I just want to go mad at them and end their dream. It's all sarcastic, though, isn't it? No one's actually living the dream. That's the whole point. And Mike in Fishguard, long story short, which usually precedes a very long and boring story.
Yeah, it's never
guilty,
true.
Guilty as charged, Mike.
It's never true. The saying that gets me shouting at the radio, I've worked all my life. No one works all their life. You work your adult life.
That's
all
being
of your
pedantic,
life.
Though, isn't
I'm
it?
I'm with whoever that is, I'm with you. And Scott in Kenilworth, a bit unique.
A bit, yeah, okay.
Unique is an absolute. Yeah, you can't be a bit of an absolute.
Yeah.
Spot on, Scott. Unique, spot on.
One. Yeah, fair enough. Nikki's going to be with you from 9 o'clock morning.
You're both a little bit special.
You've got that.
Have you done lived experience?
Oh, no, we haven't done that yet. Plenty of people are texting in.
What's your unlived experience?
Yeah, exactly. Eh? What's the alternative?
Tell me about that one.
Yeah.
we're going to talk about gambling football. Should we ban football gambling ads? Revealing research you've been talking about, opening weekend, Premier League coverage in the UK across TV, pitchside hoarding, shirt logos, radio, social media, more than 29,000 gambling messages, 165% increase on the opening weekend a year ago. Time to ban all gambling advertising in football forever. Go the way of tobacco. Don't bet on it. It's very important for football finances. Some might argue if you're taking Saudi money, strong arguments for and against that. And that stallion has bolted. Basically, where are we going with this? Football should stop taking money from anyone who has got money. Calls for Labour to go hyper nanny and get banning. The Premier League has agreed to take gambling companies off the front of shirts 2026. All right, then, back of the shirt, back of the net. Football and betting go hand in hand. How many betting giants can your kids name? This is not the flutter my grandpa used to put on the horses to his dying day, toddling down to the bookies, studying the Racing Post. You know, some kind of science in that. There are many more imaginative ways to lose. Number of corners, you know, all that stuff. Like, you know, the number of callers we have whose names begin with M, or the number of times I say 08085 909693 or 85058. Let's talk at nine.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rates. Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693. Visit bbc.co.uk/5liveterms for our terms of use and privacy notice. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And it's time for your headlines. Pressure is growing on the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to agree to a ceasefire deal with the Lebanese armed group Hezbollah. Sir Keir Starmer told the United Nations General Assembly that an escalation in fighting would only lead to more suffering.
Sir Keir Starmer has also held his first face-to-face meeting with Donald Trump, who's standing for presidency again. A UK government source told the BBC they discussed the long-standing friendship between Britain and the United States and the importance of continuing to develop a strong and enduring partnership.
The Treasury is reconsidering Labour's manifesto plan to tighten the rules on non-dom tax status, which was scrapped by the last Conservative government. BBC News understands there are concerns about how much money would be raised if wealthy foreigners left the UK.
And a powerful hurricane is battering the American state of Florida. Officials have warned of a storm surge high enough to swamp a two-story building. It's bad here, Simon, but it's not that bad, is it, weather?
Yeah,
incredible scenes actually across Florida. That hurricane has now been downgraded to a category one, but it's moved well inland. It's actually across Georgia at the moment, but the storm surge is continuing. Record-breaking storm surge and the strongest hurricane to hit the Big Bend of Florida on record. So yeah, I'm sure we'll hear more about that as the day goes on, as the morning unfolds there in the US. But for us, yeah, it's been very wet through the night and through this morning. Lots of surface water spray, localized flooding in some parts. It's been very wet so far this September. In Woburn in Bedfordshire, we've had four times the average September rainfall, and it's been the wettest month on record for Woburn. Many places seeing, you know, three times the average rainfall across southern England. So the rain is going to eventually clear today. It might take a while before it finally clears the southeast of England, but sunny spells then develop across many parts of England and Wales. One or two showers across northern England, but it will feel chilly. A brisk northerly wind. Temperatures only 11 to 14 degrees. Scotland and Northern Ireland looking largely dry again. One or two showers being brought on and a brisk northerly wind across Scotland. Temperatures of 7 to 12 degrees. And then as for the weekend, Saturday thankfully looking drier and brighter for England and Wales, although cloudier for Scotland and Northern Ireland. However, while Sunday starts off dry, chilly, with some sunshine, we're going to see an area of low pressure moving in from the Atlantic. That's going to bring a return of some heavy rain and some strong winds, gales, if not severe gales, across some parts of England and Wales. So, yeah, the disruptive weather may well continue into next week.
It's whether it's going to be around the Midlands of England as much as anything, I think, isn't it? Because we spoke to Simon Jones, our reporter in Bedfordshire earlier on, and it's those particular areas which have really taken a hammering, haven't they? And what is that going to look like on Sunday?
So the rain that's going to come in later on Sunday afternoon into the evening isn't going to be as heavy or as intense as it's been recently. However, you know, the ground, you know, as I said, it's been the wettest month on record for Bedfordshire, and the ground is going to be very saturated. So any rainfall is just going to fall on saturated ground. So while at the moment there are no warnings in force, I would expect there to be warnings issued as we go through into Sunday. So, yeah, there will be more problems, I think, as we go through Sunday night into Monday.
Righto. Thank you very much indeed, Simon. And Ellie is here. And we had those warnings again from our reporter who was passing it on basically from the Environment Agency and I suppose those motoring organisations as well, Ellie, to say, look, if you're in those areas, if you see floodwater, you've got to be sensible about it.
Yeah, don't go through it. And flooding is affecting quite a lot of routes this morning. Major roads, including the M5 northbound, that is closed between junction 16 Aztec West and 14 at Thornbury. You've got congestion there, TA38, as people are trying to get around it. Southbound, the M5 also closed between 14 at Thornbury to 15 at the Almondsbury Interchange. Congestion there to Michael Wood Services and the A38 as well, looking slow. Lots of roads around there locally closed too. So just take care, as Chris was saying there, on the train. Causing a few problems as well. Double check before you set off today because this might change throughout the day. But Transport for Wales has got a couple of services that are suspended because of the weather, particularly between Shrewsbury and Wolverhampton. There is quite a lot of flooding around there. Aside from the weather, though, the M180 eastbound in Lincolnshire, that is blocked at the moment from Junction 2 at Gainsborough to Junction 3. And in Essex, the M11 southbound, that's partially blocked because of an accident after Junction 5 at Loughton. Ellie Brennan at 5 Live Travel.
The voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Breakfast.
Next here with your sports news, it's always interesting to observe how quickly things can change in football, isn't it? Because it was only a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Spurs and a question mark over their lack of firepower, and now all of a sudden you've got a couple of forwards in really sparkling form.
Yeah, 5 goals across the last 3 matches coming from 2 players, Brennan Johnson and Dominic Solanke. So those players cost Spurs over £100 million in transfer fees. Johnson arriving last season from Nottingham Forest, Solanke in the summer from Bournemouth. And as you say, Johnson had endured a little bit of stick, really, for his goalless start to the season. Solanke's campaign had been interrupted by injury. Both, though, were on the score sheet last night in Spurs' 3-0 win at home to Karabag in the Europa League. Spurs were down to 10 men after just 7 minutes last night with a score goalless. Radu Dragosin sent off for a last-man challenge. But Johnson, Papi Matasar and Solanke with last night's goals. The Spurs boss, Ange Postecoglou, happy with the way they fought back from going down to 10.
I thought it was a good first goal for us because we were down to 10 men, but we still pressed and forced a mistake. And Brent's been good at taking up those positions, and him and Dom sort of, you know, got, you know, a good little sort of relationship there in terms of working off each other, and took his goal well. As you said, that's 3 in 3 games for him, and long may it continue.
Yeah, also an important win in the Europa League last night for Rangers. 2-0 victory over Malmo, their first victory ever in Sweden. The Rangers boss, Philippe Clement, calling it their best performance of the campaign.
I know you're going to talk about Celtic in the women's game in a moment, but lots of women's Champions League action last night as well, and a really vital win for Arsenal.
Yeah, really important, because they failed to progress beyond the qualifying rounds of the Women's Champions League last season. Last night, they overcame a 1-0 first leg deficit against BK Hecker. They won 4-0 on the night. Beth Mead amongst four different goal scorers at Meadow Park. The Gunners boss, Jonas Eidevall, afterwards, delighted by both by his side's performance and what it means for the season.
We climbed a mountain today and made it look quite easy, but it comes down for having really high quality on the pitch in decisive moments. We get off to a really good start with Wally's long-distance goal, and I think we really show that we want to play European football and continue to play European football this season.
Manchester City, they eased past Paris FC last night's 3-0 victory, meaning an 8-0 aggregate win. So City and Arsenal join Chelsea in the group stage draw this lunchtime. It's the first time three English sides will compete in the group stages in this format. Celtic became the first Scottish side to reach this new group stage after their 3-0 aggregate victory over the Ukrainian side Vorskla Poltava last night. Away from the football, England's cricketers must win today's fourth one-day international against Australia to stay alive in the five-match series. Australia lead 2-1. England getting a rain-impacted victory on Tuesday at Durham. Bowler Matthew Potts says that was huge for them.
A very big win, obviously in the context of the series, trying to keep it alive. And, you know, we set out, once we were 2-0 down, we said, why not? We're going to come back fighting and keep playing the way that we have been playing and, you know, try and win the series 3-2.
Coverage starts on Five Sports Extra from 12:15. The Super League playoffs begin tonight from 8:30 on Sports Extra. You can hear Salford Red Devils versus Lee Leopards in the elimination playoff, a place in next week's semi-finals at stake. In tennis, Jack Draper is through to the third round of the Japan Open. He beat the second seed Hubert Hurkacz in straight sets. Well, the women's British number one, Katie Bolter, has just beaten Taylor Townsend in straight sets. This is in the second round of the Beijing Open. And in the NFL overnight, the Dallas Cowboys beat the New York Giants by 20 points to 15. That is your latest from BBC Sport. You can listen on your smart speaker by saying play BBC Sports News.
Nick, thank you very much indeed. It's Five Live Breakfast, Chris and Claire with you today. We've been talking about the investigation into Mohamed Al-Fayed this morning, and we heard from a lawyer representing a number of the women who have made allegations of rape and sexual assault against the former Harrods owner. Maria Muller talked about concerns over Harrods' own compensation process. Harrods have asked us to clarify that in accordance with their process, they specifically invite and recommend victims to obtain independent advice of their choosing. So that statement from Harrods this morning. Now, it is 20 minutes to nine. We have been bringing you news all week of the escalating conflict in the Middle East. It all comes as we approach the one-year anniversary since the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza began. Almost 1,200 people were killed by Hamas, which is, of course, a designated terror organisation by the UK government. And that attack happened on October the 7th last year. In response, Israel launched an invasion of the Gaza Strip, with more than 41,000 people being killed already, many of them civilians. The BBC will be showing a series of programmes to mark 1 year on. It includes one which is already available on the iPlayer, telling the story of the attack on the Supernova Music Festival in Israel. I spoke to Ziv, one of the survivors who features in the documentary. She fled the festival with her boyfriend, nephew and his girlfriend and decided to take shelter in a roadside bomb shelter when rockets started to be fired into Israel.
Normally, it's the shelter supposed to be for 10 people maximum. We was 29 people in this shelter. 19 of them was murdered, 4 of them was kidnapped, and all the rest was survived.
There were some incredible heroics. Grenades were thrown into this shelter, and there was one person who managed to throw out 8 live grenades. Who was that? Tell us about him.
Yeah, his name is Anel Shapira, and he was a hero, my hero. Because of Anel, I'm still alive, and all the other survivors. And he was the first guy in the shelter that know to tell us that there is a terrorist inside Israel. He's not trying to calm us. He told us the situation as it is. And he told us before the first grenade get inside the shelter, he told us, if they throw a grenade, so I will take it outside. And this is what he did. He is my hero.
He lost his life in this, though, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. In the 9 grenade that get inside the shelter, he was murdered with the elf, I think, of the people in the shelter.
And you were in a situation there where you were still holding the hand of your boyfriend, Eliad. Tell me what happened after that 9th grenade went off.
In this grenade also, Eliad was injured. In this moment, Eliad grabbed my hand. And how he grabbed my hand, I can feel it's painful. And I told them, you are okay. And he told me that he was injured in his leg. And after, I think, 5 minutes, our hands are separated. And this is the last thing that I remember from Elia. And after this, I know this is the moment that he was kidnapped. Just now, of course, not in this situation.
How did you eventually get out? How did it end?
Yeah, after 6 hours, it was in 3 p.m. One guy, now I know that his son sent them a location of the shelter. He tried to save his son, but he can't find him because he is murdered and he was under all the bodies. But this is the moment that he see us and he saved us. So he take us to hospital. But just when I get to the hospital, I get a lot, maybe thousands of messages. And half of them was a picture of Elia inside Gaza from Telegram, Gaza Now. And under the headline, Israeli kidnapped into Gaza. And this is the moment that I understand that Elia was kidnapped.
Elia is still being held. How do you cope a year on?
I think that I don't really realized until now that Elia is still there. I'm like a robot because I have a very big trauma from the 7th of October, and I work like a robot. I have a mission to bring Elia home, no matter what. And I don't look about what happened and what happening now, just to bring him home. And it's very important to people understand this is not a political situation. This is a humanitarian situation. Elia just, you know, want to have fun, to go to party like every weekend, and he didn't come back. There is a lot of hostages that still alive in Gaza, and we need to bring them all back.
Ziv, who survived that grenade attack, her boyfriend Elia taken hostage in Gaza. The documentary uses first-hand accounts and hours of video from survivors at the festival. And also what it does is it mixes them with body cam footage from Hamas militants who crossed into Israel. The director of this film is Yariv Moser.
I understood very fast that I want this film to be the story of the young generation that attended the Nova Music Festival. Young, innocent, naive, I would say, youngsters that came to celebrate love, peace, freedom, values that were celebrated at this rave festival and encountered the most evil, horrific terror attack.
To be able to access all of that footage, and it's visceral because you're there, and I guess now because with smartphones, it's the first time that you can tell a story which goes from this is what was happening at the festival, this is how people were enjoying themselves, and then this huge descent into the depravity that followed. And people were filming, weren't they? They were filming because they thought, you know, what if I don't get out of here? They were filming messages, and they were also filming them escaping across fields, running from cars. There was a wealth of information, wasn't there, for you to collate here?
Oh, yeah. Tons of hours of footage that was collected from those survivors. And to be honest, I wanted the Israeli police to collaborate with us to give us access to those materials that were taken from terrorists, and but also from collected from, you know, road cameras, car cameras. They have a wealth of video files in their hands, and till this day, they refused to collaborate officially with the film. And I asked myself, why? I don't have an answer. I can only assume that they are being shown in their most weakest point in the history of Israel. So maybe that is the reason that they are not keen to collaborate with any documentary filmmaker, because officially I didn't receive anything from them, only under, you know, unofficial channels.
We mark the year anniversary. There's escalating tensions between Israel and now Hezbollah in Lebanon. The attrition in Gaza just deepens. What do you hope that this documentary will add to the conversation surrounding the problems that we are seeing a year on that don't seem to have shifted at all?
I do hope that the world will differentiate between the Palestinian people and Hamas. Hamas is a fundamentalistic terror regime that is keen to destroy the state of Israel. Now, if the world wants peace and reconciliation between Palestinian and Israelis, then there needs to be mutual understanding that these are the two people that deserve two states to live together in peace.
Yariv Moser, the director of that documentary, and just to say it's quite extraordinary using all the footage in the way that he has. When Ziv is describing what it's like inside that bomb shelter, people are filming inside it. Mm-hmm. And then he matches that, marries it up with the sort of GoPro footage that Hamas fighters outside were filming. So people were throwing the grenade out and they were throwing it back in. It's quite an extraordinary piece of work, incredibly traumatic. It's the full documentary, Storyville, We Will Dance Again. It's available from today on BBC Two and iPlayer from 9 a.m. And the film forms part of a group of programmes marking 1 year since the 7th of October attacks and the war between Israel and Hamas. A BBC Storyville, Life and Death in Gaza, will be broadcast in October, 10 tonight.
And of course, the Prime Minister has been talking about the situation between Israel and Hezbollah at the UN General Assembly in New York, warning that it could be a conflict that could spill over into a war that no one can control, in his words. And he's been making the most of his time whilst being in New York, because he then met the Republican presidential candidate, former President Donald Trump, for the very first time last night. Before the meeting, Trump was asked by a reporter what he thought about Keir Starmer.
Well, I'm going to see him in about an hour, so I have to be nice, right? But I actually think he's very nice. I think he ran a great race. He did very well. It's very early, but he's popular, and I'll be seeing him, and I'll send you regards.
Well, they met for dinner at Trump Tower, and our political editor, Chris Mason, sent us this voice note.
Hello from the Prime Minister's plane. We are somewhere over the Atlantic on our way back from New York to London. So Keir Starmer has been in New York for the last couple of days at what's known as the UN General Assembly, annual gathering loads of world leaders, lots of talk, as you'd expect, about Lebanon and about Israel and Gaza and the Middle East and Ukraine. But a little twist at the end of the trip, this two-hour dinner at Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue in New York. Prime Minister had never met Donald Trump before, and he took the chance because Donald Trump was in New York. In fact, Donald Trump did a news conference just before the meeting in which he described Keir Starmer as actually very nice. He ran a great race. It's very, very early. He's very popular. And the Prime Minister had also told us before the dinner that he thought it was important to establish a relationship between the two of us. But here's a twist. The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, was also at this meeting. And he once described his host as a woman-hating, neo-Nazi-sympathising sociopath and a tyrant in a toupee. Now, the Prime Minister has also never met Donald Trump's Democratic rival. That's the Vice President, Kamala Harris. She was in Washington yesterday alongside the President, President Biden, meeting President Zelensky of Ukraine. Downing Street saying that he would like to speak to the Vice President, but there had been the usual diary challenges. So the Prime Minister going about trying to see as many leaders as he possibly can at the moment, many of whom he has never met, including people who are not actually leaders right now, or at least heads of government or heads of state, Donald Trump among them.
So that's our political editor, Chris Mason. He's been a very busy boy following the Prime Minister recently. Now then, it's 7 minutes to nine, and it's time, I've been looking forward to this, to speak to something of a sporting legend. From playing against Pele in the North American Soccer League to caretaker manager spells with Wolverhampton Wanderers, Aston Villa, Birmingham City, Jim Barron has had a ridiculously long and distinguished career in football. Now he's 80 and his love of the game burns stronger than ever. At least twice a week now, he's making the 172-mile round trip from his home in Binfield in Berkshire to Bath City, where he's assistant manager. 172-mile round trip. He's going to be 81 on the 19th of October, and he'll mark the occasion when Bath visit Hornchurch on his birthday for a National League South game. What other way would you want to be spending your birthday? Before that, they're at league rivals Salisbury tomorrow in the third qualifying round of the FA Cup. Jim, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. What a treat to speak to you. It really is. And I've been reading your story, and it's quite some journey you've had through football, Jim. How would you describe your relationship with football, particularly now?
Well, I've been very lucky. I mean, I've got paid for something I do for nothing virtually all my life. So in that respect, it was excellent. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, the trip sometimes down to Bath becomes a little bit of a drag, but luckily it's motorway all the way.
Yeah.
But I enjoy the involvement with the boys, and I just enjoy the game anyway.
I mean, you look, and I'm only judging this from recent pictures, you look in incredibly good nick, you know? So what's the secret?
I try to train three times a week if I can,
yeah,
with kettlebells, and I try to have a game of golf once, possibly twice a week. I just try to keep fairly fit as I can, to be fair.
Yeah. The Pele story. Okay, I'm sure you've probably told this many, many times down at the golf club, I would have thought. But, you know, what is it? Because I've seen some photos as well where you get the better of him, don't you, in the match?
Well, that's debatable if you could ever get the better of Pele. But, yeah, a couple of incidents that just happened to be, there's been a photographer there who took a photograph a couple of times. Yeah, but we played against him twice. I mean, at that time, there was lots of very good players in the American League at the time.
Mm.
And Pele was obviously the cream of the crop.
What was that like, though, when you're there warming up and you would have known you were playing him, but still, when he actually walked out, there must have been quite a big bit of you thinking, there
he
is.
Yeah, a fairly bit of apprehension and hoping he didn't score,
yeah,
which he didn't. So yeah, that was the main thing. But, yeah, I mean, in a really, not that I know him well, but just after talking for a short time, really lovely fella.
Mm. You've had an astonishing career. Like I said, you know, Chelsea, Oxford United, Forest, Swindon. It was the Connecticut Bicentennials, wasn't it, in the States? Peterborough United.
Yeah.
You even managed a game in the Premier League, Jim.
I did. I may be one of the only 100% managers in the Premier League. It was only one game, but we beat Tottenham 5-3.
That'll do. That'll do.
That'll
a high-scoring thriller
do
as well.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you're staying in the game. I mean, you've given us an idea. You know, it's something you love. But at 80, that's why we wanted to speak to you, because it's unusual. You know, you're going to be 81 in a few weeks' time, which is fantastic. You know, and still being right involved in it. Is it an obsession? Is it an addiction when you get to that point, Jim?
Well, to be fair, I don't feel 80. I think that's the main thing. I most probably feel about 30-odd, but I think I'm 30-odd, but I'm not. I'm 80. But I think that's the main thing. For me, it's just been a little bit positive, and age is, somebody said it's only a number, and to be fair, that's true. I think it depends how you deal with it yourself.
Yeah. I never used to get that thing when I was younger and people would say, I still feel 21. And you'd think, what are you talking about? And then when you get older, you go, oh, I get it. I get it. Yeah. Well, good luck in the match on tomorrow, Salisbury.
Yeah, Salisbury away.
Yeah.
Another cup game, yeah.
And another long drive for you. Yeah.
Yes, another drive.
Hope you get petrol expenses, Jim, anyway. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely, yeah.
Well, good man, and happy birthday for a few weeks' time.
I appreciate that. You take care.
Yeah, and you. Nice talking to you. Jim Barron, a career, a life in football, Claire.
Oh, wow, that's just so, so impressive. Just want to say thank you to everybody who's got in touch with us today. In my opinion, was my opinion. Mm-hmm. I cannot stand pointless words and phrases. I know I'm guilty of saying them. Thank you. We've had an overwhelming response. So here's just a few of them. You know who you are. At this current moment in time.
It is what it is.
All things being equal.
And going forward.
Any sentence starting with the word so.
Etc, etc.
You know what I mean.
At the end of the day.
To be fair.
Saying like in what seems like every sentence.
Saying basically at the start of a sentence.
So to speak.
Heads up.
100%.
Absolutely in response to everything.
For real, Claire.
Hate that. Hate this as well. My bad.
My bad, I do say that. Reaching out, though.
Stop doing that. Here's a thing.
Right? At the end of a sentence, guilty.
No, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you. You're not right. For sure.
It literally happened.
Just happened, didn't it? It just happened. Mm. The vast majority. It is or it isn't a majority.
And in a restaurant, can I get... I do. I, again...
You're not American. You can't get it.
I know.
I'm not going to lie.
From the get-go.
Almost unique.
Having a meteoric rise.
They don't rise, they fall. Thank you. Thank you. I hope you've enjoyed the group's therapy session this morning. Have a great weekend.
Yeah.
Nikki's next.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
The voice of the UK.
Yeah, and it's the lived experience we always want on the nation's phone-in, as opposed to the unlived one. Thank you very much to Claire and to Chris. So gambling in football, should we ban, he said, slapping the table. Should we ban football gambling ads? What do you think? Revealing research on the opening weekend of the Premier League, coverage in the UK across TV, including pitchside hoardings and shirt logos, radio, social media, more than 29,000 gambling messages, a 165% increase on the opening weekend a year ago. It's time to ban all gambling advertising in football forever. Go the way of tobacco. Don't you bet on it. Very important for football finances, and lower leagues as well. And some might argue, hang on a minute, if you're taking Saudi money, strong arguments for and against that. I know. And that stallion has bolted. You know, basically, where are you going to stop? Where are we going with this? Football's not taking money from anyone who has got money. There are calls for Labour, heard it on Breakfast this morning, for Labour to go into hyper-nanny mode and get banning. Some say it's not difficult for them. The Premier League has agreed to take gambling companies off the front of shorts. You may remember the phone-in on that one. And that's going to happen in 2026. Shirts, I mean, obviously. Front of the shirt, back of the shirt, back of the net, bit of that. And football and betting go hand in hand. Your sport and betting go hand in hand. There are calls to break that link. And how many betting giants can your kids name? That's another one. And this is as well, it's not the flutter that my grandpa used to put on the horses to his dying day when he had 6 months with us. He'd 6 months with my aunt. That's too much information. Anyway, he used to toddle off, put a bet, and he used to study the racing post. You know, whatever you think, there's more science in that, but there's so many more imaginative ways to lose now. You know, the number of corners and all that stuff.